Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to the middle of the week. Congratulations, you are halfway to the weekend. We're glad of it. We're going to get you all the way to go home time on a Friday afternoon. But right now, it's the middle of the week. So we got to hear what the camel has to say about that. Hit it, man.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woohoo! Yes, it is. It's hump day. You are halfway to the weekend, like I said, and we're glad to have you with us here on another edition of Right Side Radio and pushing the buttons on the board. JP, how you doing, man?
Doing good.
Good.
It's a good hump day so far.
It's a beautiful hump day so far. Really, you've been learning your way around the board and figuring out all the techno and just doing stuff. This has been something.
We're getting there. It's gonna take some time.
You're doing good work, man.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. All right, we got a great show laid on for you. I'm sitting here, by the way overdressed for radio. I had to wear my lawyer uniform all day long. But at 3 o'clock today, I'm looking forward to this. We got some guys coming in. At least one of them, anyway. Trey Pierman and his partner Andrew Richardson have a Warbird South Flying Museum, but they have a DC-3, which is an older aircraft, but they have a DC-3. They've been flying relief supplies into North Carolina. We got those guys coming in studio at 3 o'clock today. You're going to talk to them about what they've been doing, seeing what their experience has been like, and we'll get some firsthand take on the relief that they've been able to bring and what they're seeing in the whole process. So, yeah. Trey Pierman and Andrew Richardson coming up at 3 o'clock today. And then at 4 o'clock, you know the deal. We play the camel at the beginning of the show every week. But then middle of the show, we have our brethren Jeff Poore and Dale Jackson. They're going to come on and do the Grand Council with us at 4 o'clock. So Grand Council, 4 o'clock. And then I still got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the Triple Dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First out the gate, going to do another edition of Illegal Illegals. So they come here illegally and commit crimes while they're here. That's a double. That's an illegal illegal at that point. And there's been some new things happening and some rehash of statistics that you guys cannot forget as we move through election cycles. So we'll do that as Dipper 1, Illegal Illegals. It's something else. Number two, we're going to talk about storm relief. Now, right now, that Hurricane Milton is bearing down on the coast of Florida due to hit later this evening. It is still running at a Category 4 level. It is said to be a devastating hurricane, with all expectations being it's going to cause massive damage, perhaps even loss of life. So be praying for the people of Florida. But let's not forget that what's already happened in the Carolinas and in Georgia and in parts of Florida with Hurricane Helene that passed through just a little over a week ago. So we're going to talk about storm relief, what's happening, what are they doing to help them, and have that conversation with Trey Pierman, who's been flying his own DC-3 back and forth to drop off supplies. And then number three, assuming I can get to it with all that content, the trans agenda. There have been some latest developments in the pushback on the transgender agenda. And I'm just telling you, this to me is one of the most evil, heinous agendas that's out there. What it's doing to kids is unconscionable, and I'm afraid that we're going to be held to account one day if we can't get it shut down. So number three on the Triple Dipper, the trans agenda. Well, all right, let me jump on over to the Right Side Way opening monologue. As I do every day, I start off with some comments, and today, I got to be honest with you, today I'm going to give you a bit of, it's history plus a lesson all at the same time. So here's the thing. We're coming up on the 41st anniversary this month, the 41st anniversary of an event that many people have already forgotten about. It was a military action right here in our hemisphere that saw untold heroism and true combat action against communist forces. And yet, like I said, most folks have forgotten about it. We all know the stories about Mogadishu in Iraq and Afghanistan and the Beirut Marine Barracks bombing. But how many people in the U.S. remember that we actually fought, the U.S. did, a pitched battle to rescue 1,000 Americans and stop the influx of communist troops coming in from Cuba and taking hold of a tiny island nation because it was the right thing to do? It was Operation Urgent Fury, the invasion of the island of Grenada. So let me start by saying I spent a number of my years in the military on jump status as a paratrooper. I was a qualified jump master. That meant that I was often responsible for some aspect of the airborne operations that my unit conducted. So whether on the ground as the departure area control officer or in the aircraft to conduct final inspections and outside air safety checks and putting the paratroopers out the door on target to hit the drop zone, well, it was high adventure and memories that I will not soon forget. And I got to tell you, despite how it looks, the amount of time you spent preparing for each drop is, generally speaking, a by-the-book, safety-oriented, step-by-step sequence of events. I mean, in a training jump, every single jumper had to go through a pre-jump training, a jump master brief, a departure area brief, practice actions in the aircraft, but perhaps most importantly were the rehearsals on how to land. I mean, what to do in the event of a parachute malfunction. We used to always say with some dark humor that anybody can fall out of a perfectly good airplane. It's how you land that makes a difference. And that is very true. So these were all static line jumps. No free falls, just static line. That meant that you had a cloth static line that was hooked to the back of your main parachute harness. The jumper wore it on your back. But the other end of the static line was actually clipped and secured to a steel cable inside the aircraft. And when the jumper exited the aircraft, whether it be a fixed wing or a rotary wing, a helicopter, the static line would stretch out to its full length, and when it hit the end, it would basically jerk the jumper's main parachute out of its pack tray. I mean, sometimes the shoot shock from those jumps, especially when Air Force pilots didn't bother to slow down all the way to proper jump speed, it could give you some serious whiplash if you didn't keep your chin tucked down tight to your chest. But every jumper has two parachutes. Every jumper has a main and a reserve. The main is on your back, and the reserve chute is right in front of you, strapped to the jumper's front waist area. And once you leave the bird, every jumper is supposed to count for the requisite number of seconds, like 4 to 6 seconds, depending on what kind of aircraft. And you literally count 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000. You're thinking, where's the chute? Boom, boom, and then it comes out. If you don't feel that massive chute shock, you don't look around to see where it is, you've got an immediate decision to make. You pull the reserve. I say all that because when we jumped in training, well, the usual minimum safe altitude was 800 feet above ground level. So we would typically jump from between 800 and 1,200 feet, depending on conditions. If you were loaded down with combat equipment and the air was cold and you had a big breakfast, you could expect to be in the air for maybe, I don't know, 30, 40 seconds, sometimes a minute. Felt like forever. But if your main parachute didn't deploy and you were in a terminal fall, you had mere seconds to get your reserve chute deployed. We trained over and over and over again on what to do. When to pull the reserve handle, how to pull the reserve handle, how to land under reserve chutes, over and over and over. It was ingrained to the point that it was supposed to be like muscle memory. I cannot remember ever jumping a static line without that fat reserve chute strapped to my midsection. It was an extra measure of confidence. It could mean life or death. And now get back to my story about Grenada. So back in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was a young lieutenant, we had a sergeant in my unit who was just kind of revered by the men. He had been a Ranger instructor. Before that, he had served with the 1st Battalion, 75th Ranger Regiment. His dress uniform looked like a South American dictator to us. I mean, at a time when most troops had never been to war, he had a Ranger tab, combat infantryman's badge, a Bronze Star for Valor, a Purple Heart, and very notably, he had a very rare set of combat jumpmaster wings. That meant that he had actually parachuted into a combat zone. So in 1983, October to be exact, President Reagan initiated Operation Urgent Fury when Marxist rebels took a number of U.S. citizens hostage on the island nation of Grenada. So this sergeant that I'm talking about, he jumped into Grenada with the 1st Rangers. But on that mission, everything I just told you about, all those protocols for safe static line jumping, they went out the window. All the protocols changed when contact was made with the enemy. This was not only a fight that needed to happen, but it was a fight that was going to happen, and it was going to be men doing things that were extreme. And the Rangers were scheduled to conduct, initially, just an air-land seizure. They were going to land the planes, offload, and seize the airfield in order to prepare for the next wave of U.S. forces. But en route to the landing site, it was learned that the enemy had already placed obstructions all over the runway, making it impossible to land. And to make things worse, heavy anti-aircraft and weather conditions were making it very difficult. The first pass of Rangers that hit the ground came into immediate contact with the enemy. Within 20 minutes, the jump masters on board the planes yelled that the Rangers were in contact on the ground, that all personnel were now switching to a parachute assault. They immediately began an in-flight rig. That's where you load up with your parachutes while you're in the plane. No time for jump master inspections. And then came the announcement that in order to avoid enemy fire, they were going to exit the aircraft at top speed at only 500 feet above ground. 500 feet. With so little time under canopy, the decision was made at some point that in order to save time on rigging, the Rangers were going to jump without reserve chutes. I mean, y'all, this is everything that goes against the grain of what we had learned, right? They're jumping below the usual minimum safe altitude, under enemy fire, with no reserves. It was an all-in moment. Static line is hard, y'all. Static line in combat is harder. Static line in combat at 450 to 500 feet with no reserve is unheard of. I know Rangers who told me they broke every rule. One guy watched his buddy break a belt of M60 ammo out and load his machine gun in the plane and jump out the door with his M60 hanging around his neck. Why am I telling you all this? What is my point? Well, part of it's history. Operation Urgent Fury, the invasion of Grenada, is a mission that's almost lost to time now. We rescued 1,000 Americans. We went there because we had to, because we had Americans in harm's way. Think about what you see nowadays where we abandon Americans in Afghanistan. But the other part, though, is the level of commitment that these men exhibited. When they heard they had brothers in arms in contact on the ground in need of immediate relief, that changed the entire dynamic. It meant that they were suddenly willing and able to exit a perfectly good airplane with tracer rounds in the air at below a generally accepted safe jump altitude into a hot drop zone with no reserve. Having no reserve meant no extra personal safety. No reserve meant no way out. No reserve was a total commitment to whatever was going to come. And I'm going to tell you right now, we need more of that today. We need a mindset in this country that says all in, no reserve, whatever it takes. Because the progressive left right now will tell us over and over again that America is an imperialist nation, that we are systemically racist, that we need to consider climate equity and disaster relief equity and hiring equity, but never firing equity. Of course not. Look, I'm tired of the constant haranguing of the progressive left that celebrates, accentuates, and even mandates the decline of a no-reserve mentality. Make no mistake that foreign policy that focuses on appeasement and avoidance only invites bad actors to act badly. Whether it be on the world stage in the presence of a near-peer adversary or the local school board meeting or in a Walmart parking lot, we need more Americans to remember what it means to have a no-reserve mentality. I celebrate when I come across stories of men and women who are willing to go hard places and do hard things. I think that despite the overreaching attempts of the left to denigrate the American spirit and to water down standards, that the vast majority of Americans feel as I do, that what made us a great nation was the blessings of an almighty God and a controlled recklessness in the way we did our business. America has always traditionally been a no-reserve nation, a place where the cowboy spirit conquered the West, where the industrial base changed the modern world, where the men and women went to war to save the world from tyranny, where respect and honor were more important than gold and power. We put men on the moon, all in, no reserve, and we need more of it. And the left hates it. They need us to be passive and quiet and willing to acquiesce so they can pass their debilitating agendas to water down values and destroy traditions, demean faith, and rework America into a place where every citizen is dependent on government and has no personal ambition. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, God bless those who are willing to go all in when they're needed. God bless those who can hear that troops are in contact or friends are in need or communities need their voices or churches need volunteers, and they can pivot away from whatever plan they've got and be willing to jump in feet first with a no-reserve attitude. 41 years ago this month, Operation Urgent Fury. No reserve. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, they did. And listen, the story is way beyond that. Members of the 82nd Airborne, other units were on standby. They flooded into that one island nation, did what they had to do. And yet it's kind of forgotten the time. But it was the only time I know of where a combat jump was made below safe altitude, under fire, no reserve. Bring it on. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one right here, I am talking about Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. So we got plenty on tap here. I'm about to jump right into it, but I'll take two more text messages real quick. Morgan from Fort Myers, Florida says, I'm taking a break from the wall-to-wall coverage of Milton. Tornadoes have hit a block from me. Lots of damage in the Fort Myers area. Worse is yet to come. Well, Morgan, brother, batten down the hatches, and we're praying for y'all. Blessings on you, and we're just going to keep our eyes on it. I'd like to say I can't imagine, but then I can, because our version of it up here is tornadoes, and we've certainly been through those. But anyway, yep, we're praying for Florida. Steve from Tennessee says, good stuff. Been to Grenada several times. They well remember our efforts, and they have a monument there near the airport, the only airport. So I love that place, and they love us, Steve. That's cool. I did not know that. And I would, you know what? I think I'd like to visit there myself. Well, let me jump into a dipper number one here, and illegals. So they're already here illegally, right? And by the way, I know that there is a legal status to the parole program. All right, so technically there are legal under the parole program, but I'll be honest with you, it's what I would call on the margins. Legal, yes. Ethical, certainly not wise. And I don't blame the Haitians for getting on the plane that was offered to them. But what I don't want to see much more of is a government that's so tone deaf, so unable to understand what they're doing to burden the municipalities and the counties of this nation, that they just continue just flooding them in, just like, let's bring more. Why not? I mean, gosh, we only have 10 million. So we have actually grown the population of the United States. Literally, we have actually grown the population of the United States by approximately 4% since Biden took office, just on people being flooded into our migrant parole systems. Those who are here illegally, upwards of 10 million. Those who have been brought in on the parole programs, several more million. We are looking at something that is beyond anything that could have, and I'll say this. Don't tell me it's not intentional. Because yes, I do believe that there has been an effort made to strain the systems of the United States by having a globalist open borders policy. That being said, when you start flooding people in like this, you cannot help but have bad actors. There's going to be people there with questionable backgrounds, with criminal records, and with ill intent. And we're seeing it. And we're seeing it a lot. Story here on Fox News. I want to bring these things to your attention. But story here on Fox News that came out just today, actually yesterday. Afghan man in Oklahoma plotted election day terror attacks on the U.S. on behalf of ISIS, Justice Department says. Now, good on them. As much as we talk about, you know, the Justice Department under Merrick Garland, I will say this, the DOJ caught this guy. Yay. But I'll also point out he's here on a special immigrant visa from Afghanistan, and he's been here for 3 years. Still waiting on his parole hearing, right? 3 years. Nasir Ahmad Tawadi, 27 years old, obtained firearms and ammunition to conduct a violent attack on U.S. soil, as well as taking a number of steps to help prepare the plot. He entered the United States in September of 2021, weeks after U.S. troops pulled out of Afghanistan on a special immigrant visa. So that was, by the way, that was at a time when the United States was, you know, bailing on its allies and abandoning its citizens, but we were also taking in droves of people that were just getting on planes, and we weren't even truly vetting them, and they were just arriving in the United States. He was one of them, apparently. Tawadi was arrested on Monday, charged with conspiring and attempting to provide material support to ISIS. His plan, I'll just break it down for you instead of just reading it to you. His plan was he wanted to conduct election day assaults on gatherings of people waiting at polling sites. And he had a plan to do it. His plan was mass casualty. And he had already talked about becoming a martyr. He was good with the idea of being a martyr. In fact, they even have video of him in July of this year reading to children from a text that described the rewards that a martyr receives in the afterlife. He faces up to 35 years in prison. That right there, credit where credit's due, DOJ caught him. Blame where blame is due, he never should have been here. Biden administration adds him to the list of bad actors they've allowed to flood into our country. Well, now, Phil, they're not all bad actors. Didn't say they were. Did not say they were. I get it. Some of them just want a better life. They don't know where they're going to get and where they're going to go. But how about this? Let's refresh on some data. All right? Fox News. Dateline, September 28th. So we're right at about, what, 12 days ago. Tens of thousands of illegal immigrants with sex offenses and homicide convictions could be loose on our streets, according to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's not like some NGO or, you know, conservative watchdog group. That's ICE itself saying this. That's ICE data. ICE data, as of July 2024, this year, is broken down by those who are considered to be in detention, meaning they're currently incarcerated somewhere being held, and those who are not in detention. The ones who are not in detention are what they call their non-detained docket. So the non-detained docket now has 7 million people on it. 7 million who have been flagged and then released into the country. Just let them in. Here you go, here's your ticket. Here you go, here's your ticket. Next, here you go, here's your ticket. Next, here you go, here's your ticket. The data says that among those not in detention, there's 425,431 of them who are convicted criminals and 222,141 of them with pending criminal charges. You know what that is? That means 10%. That is almost not quite. That's about 9% of the 7 million have major criminal records. Things like 62,000 of them who are known to have been convicted of assault, 14,000 of them convicted of burglary, 56,000 plus of them drug convictions, 13,000 plus of them convicted of homicides, 2,500 of them have kidnapping convictions, 15,000 plus have sexual assault convictions. Why would you know that and then release them into our country? Do they just want mayhem? Do they just want chaos? And that's what appears to be happening. The number of illegal immigrants on the non-detained docket soared from 3.7 million when Biden took office. There were 3.7 million that were out there, and we were trying to track them. It is now almost doubled to 7 million in just a few years. Now, listen, the reality is you hear these mass statistics, and you think, okay, is anybody doing anything, though? Yeah, they are. How about this one? Story that just came out yesterday. New York Post. Dallas. Upscale neighborhood. Four Tren de Aragua gang members from Venezuela. Illegal immigrants. The leader was a guy named Wilmer Colmenares Gonzalez, 27. Another one's last name is Hernandez Hernandez. Allegedly held police at bay for hours after following a victim into her garage, pistol whipping her, forcing her into her home, and then threatening to cut off her fingers if she did not give them the expensive jewelry they believed was stashed in her house. Colmenares Gonzalez crossed over the border, apparently, in Brownsville, Texas, and he has a pending application for temporary protected status. Well, by golly, guess why? Because he's a Venezuelan migrant. So he's allowed to say, I'm here in your country, and I'm scared of where I'm from. But while I'm here, I'm going to commit crimes. But that's okay. I need temporary protected status. Texas Governor Greg Abbott recently, by the way, announced that Tren de Aragua is a terrorist organization in his state. Authorities in Texas have already arrested dozens of suspected and confirmed TDA gangbangers in San Antonio alone and in El Paso. Over 100 of them are believed to have taken part in a violent mob at the El Paso border, if you remember that, when they rushed the gates. That just happened in the last couple days. Y'all, I'm telling you, we cannot lose sight of this, because right now I think the storms and everything else are rightfully taking, you know, the top of the ticket when it comes to the news. But as we approach this election cycle, we cannot forget what the Biden-Harris administration has done, what the border czar Kamala Harris has done, or for that matter, not done, that has made our nation so much less safe than it was before. 7 million people, of which 9%-ish are all known criminals. That's literally almost 700,000 known criminals that they flagged at the border and then let them in anyway. Why does that make sense? Short answer, it doesn't. I got a quick call that I'll take before I go to the break. Mike from Decatur. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hey, doing great, Phil. My question is, these people that they catch that have the plan and intent to murder the American citizens, why can they not give them the death penalty when they catch them?
I don't know that they can't. But I don't know that they can't give him the death penalty. Now, he didn't commit murder, but it was conspiracy to commit murder.
Well, at least they ought to give him life in prison, you know. But another question I've got, I posed this to one of the state senators about the fentanyl that's coming in, they say, by drone over the border.
Yeah.
That they've got all these missiles and all the other things they shoot down planes. Why can they not shoot some of those things down or at least have some of the Marine snipers down? I know they're good enough to do that.
Well, so first of all, we're talking about different kinds of drones. You're not going to launch a missile on something you can buy at Walmart. They're using like Walmart-style drones with little baskets under them to carry the stuff across. They're not using big, like, Predator drones that the military uses. I agree. I agree. Anti-drone capability, jamming their signals, shooting them down, I think it has to happen.
Well, from that discussion that they had on the radio was that some of these things were capable of carrying like 100 pounds. So they had to be pretty good size.
I would reckon so. Mike, thanks for the call, man. I'm about to head to a break.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We get back. I'm gonna tell you about a couple more things to look at. But one of the ways that we're seeing the small towns of America, to include places like, you know, Athens, Alabama, Sylacauga, Marshall County, Alabama, how we're seeing them suddenly see influxes. Well, there are some corporate entities that are also at play here. And I think we need to talk about how they're factoring in to the illegal situation. All right, we're going to take a break right now. Take me to a break there, JP. We'll do that. We'll come right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades in here. All right, we're finishing up number one of the Triple Dipper here on illegals. All right, so they come here illegally. And then they commit crimes while they're here. It's a double. They're illegals at that point. I got to tell you, and I mentioned earlier, and I know this. I mean, if like they even what they fact checked J.D. Vance the other day. Well, you know, they are here in a legal status. The Haitian immigrants that are on parole. Okay. Well, yeah, the CHNV program, we know Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, Venezuela. Those countries are getting basically free air transport, flying them in. And setting them up with, you know, living and wages and what free phones. I don't. But anyway, the bottom line is this: is it a legal status technically? Is it ethically right to keep doing that right now? No. Is there any wisdom in it? No. But they're doing it anyway. That being said, there's been a lot of questions about, okay, places like Springfield, Ohio, Sylacauga, Alabama. Like Springfield, Ohio, by the way, Springfield, a population of 60,000. That's a reasonably sized town, like a moderately sized town. The population of 60,000 just had another influx of 20,000. They added a third more in terms of Haitian migrants. You've got literally a third more added. They just grew by 25%. There's now an 80,000 population base in Springfield, Ohio, but 20,000 of those just came in most recently through the parole program. And you look at it and go, how are they choosing these communities? Because this is not like Texas Governor Greg Abbott taking people who are coming across his southern border and deciding to, you know, put them on a bus and send them to a sanctuary city somewhere. Sylacauga, Alabama is not a sanctuary city. Athens, Alabama is not a sanctuary city. What we're looking at here is they are sending them to places that they feel like, A, can't do much about it, and B, they're going there because in some cases there are employers that are going, hey, we need some labor. We'll take some labor. What do you got? What do you got? We got a busload of Haitians. We'll take them. Story here on the Daily Wire came out yesterday. Temp agencies profiting from Haitian labor in Springfield encourage migration. Springfield, Ohio, temp agency is profiting off of migrant labor, encouraging Haitian migration to the small Rust Belt city. Reportedly is now drawing scrutiny from state and federal authorities. Well, the feds are sending them there, so I'm not sure why they're getting scrutiny from the feds. But one particular company is called First Diversity Staffing, and another one I believe is called TEN. But First Diversity Staffing has been supplying Haitian labor to companies like Amazon, Dole, another company called Topre, which is an automotive parts manufacturer. They're even providing transportation to the migrants, getting them shuttled back and forth to work. Y'all, that's happening in Alabama, too, by the way. It just is. And then the reality is, what we're looking at here is you've got companies that are making out like bandits, but they're also creating fear and unrest in the communities. And no, I'm not saying that all these Haitians are bad people. I'm not. I'm not even going down the whole thing. Are they eating cats? I'm not even talking about that. What I'm saying is when you suddenly drop 20,000 people into a community of 60,000, you are creating instability. You are creating unrest, and you are creating fear and concern. And they could care less. And these guys are they're making out like bandits. Springfield, like I said, 60,000 residents. Boom, 20,000 Haitians just dropped in. First Diversity and the other company, 10, have now caught the attention of state and federal authorities. Both the FBI and the Ohio Attorney General are now investigating them over human trafficking allegations. Because you have to look at it and go, huh, wait a minute. Under the CHNV parole program, wink, wink, nod, nod, there's supposed to be someone there as a sponsor on the other side. And we're not seeing that. In fact, this CHNV parole program, for all of its warts and blemishes, it was actually shut down in, I think, May. It was shut down in May because there was rampant corruption with the fact that there were sponsorships that were being abused. You had people that were career and like, you know, multi-sponsors. Like you had one individual's name had been used to sponsor something like 3,000 people. Well, that's rampant sponsor abuse. And so they shut down the entire program, and then they reopened it 60 days later. You cannot tell me they had resolved all the issues. And now what you're seeing is you've got these staffing companies that are keying in, and they're literally taking advantage of the fact that you've got Haitians being dropped in, and then they're trafficking them up to places where they can profit by getting them into some of the temp staffing jobs. Because temp staffing gets paid by the employee. By how many employees they provide. Yeah, it's a racket. The government has created it, though. That's the problem, is the federal government has created the issue by instigating a program that is not sustainable in its current form. I totally get legal immigration. I have naturalized citizens in my family, dear people who waited in line after doing everything right, and they're watching and wondering why they had to wait in line now. Because apparently anyone can just say, I'm scared where I live and I want to come here, and they get paroled in and they just go to work. All right, listen, we're going to switch gears. We're going to move out of that. That was illegals. We're going to go into storm relief. I got some folks coming in studio you're going to want to hear from. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh, yeah. Like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two. Man, somebody stole hour number one. I didn't even catch where it went. But hour number two is already upon us here on Hump Day. Glad you are with us. And we're going to switch gears. So number two of the Triple Dipper for the day, I just called it storm relief because there's so much in the news right now. We're watching Florida is bracing for impact. I am pleased to say, though, that it does appear Milton has dropped to a Cat 3. That doesn't mean anything. Cat 3 is still 125 mile per hour winds, but it's still going to be catastrophic as it hits somewhere in the neighborhood of Tampa, Clearwater, somewhere in that area. But the bottom line is pray for Florida. But let's not forget what's already been happening. What, a week, 10 days ago, we had Hurricane Helene that swept up through Florida, and no one ever saw something like this where the most devastation appears to be in the Carolinas, go figure. Devastation along the path, but then it just hunkered down over the mountains of western North Carolina, east Tennessee, places that I love like Asheville, North Carolina. And the devastation has been unbelievable. What has also been unbelievable, though, has been the response of just good folks. People who decide to stand up and say, you know what, I can help with that. I can do a thing. I can go there. And there's all kinds of folks. Samaritan's Purse is one of my favorite groups. And then Church of the Highlands, which is my church here in the state of Alabama, they are huge. They're already up there and working. We're up there on like day three. End result is that there are, yes, there's FEMA, and yes, there's questions about FEMA's response, and yes, there's U.S. troops and all that's necessary. But there's also been citizens that have shown up daily on behalf of their, you know, state-to-state neighbors. Two of them are sitting right here in studio right now. So I got two guys in studio with me right now who, believe it or not, own their own DC-3 aircraft, and they decided to fly supplies in North Carolina several times. So I've got Andrew Richardson and Trey Pearman sitting in the right side studio. How you guys doing?
Good, Phil. How about you?
I'm good.
Doing wonderful, Phil. Thank you.
Absolutely. Appreciate you. All right. So first of all, I got to ask, you got a DC-3? How did you just go out and buy a DC-3?
Well, we had a bad lapse of judgment one day and decided to go buy an 80-year-old airplane.
Yeah, no doubt. But it's obviously fully functional because you've been using it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Great, best piece of equipment on the planet for sure.
Well, okay, so a DC-3 is not like something you run down to the local used airplane lot and buy, but is this a business? What's the deal?
For the most part, pleasure craft for sure. Had a guy, a buddy, call me one day and said, you know, knew that I was in the radial engine world. I've got a C-45, Beechcraft C-45, that's a 1942 model. So I'm real familiar with the old military aircraft. And one day he said, hey, I know where there's a fantastic buy on a DC-3. Technically, it's a C-47, so it was a military designation.
Oh, yeah.
And then converted DC-3 for civilian use. So I said, well, I was having to fly to Knoxville one day for business, and the plane was up in Cincinnati, so I figured I'd just quick hop over to Cincinnati. It was only, you know, maybe an hour flight over there. So went to go look at it, had bird's nest and you know, stuck everywhere. You know, it was pretty nasty at the time, but decided it would be worthwhile to get it back up to speed and back in the air. So we went
Did you actually fly it home, I assume, or did you have to dismantle it and bring it back?
No. We had to work on it for about 3 or 4 days to get it running, clear all the bird's nest out, make sure everything, landing gear still worked, a lot of test runs on the ground, and then flew it back day before Thanksgiving, about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. I believe it was.
Is a C-47, was a military designation, was it a Caribou? Is that what it was, or is it?
Dakota.
Dakota, that's right, mm-hmm. Yeah. Did it have a ramp on the back? Or is it all side entry, like loading?
All side entry.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, all right. So you guys, obviously, you're into airplanes. You're both pilots, am I correct?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Both commercial pilots. Yes, sir.
Okay. But this is not your full-time gig, flying, right? I mean, you've got other things you do, I assume.
Correct. Yes,
all right,
sir.
So what do you do otherwise?
So I am a real estate developer, also on J.P. King Auction Company, where we sell luxury properties around the globe.
Yeah.
And then Andrew here.
I do earthwork and underground utilities and ADA sidewalk compliance for apartment complexes.
And yet you have a DC-3.
That's right.
All right. Well, listen, you guys have an aircraft, and I assume you house it at what, Gadsden Airport? Is that where it is?
Correct. Yes,
okay.
Sir.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of folks don't realize Gadsden Airport's rated for almost any aircraft in the world. You can land a C-5 out there.
That's right.
I've jumped out there a bunch. I used to be with 20th Group, and mm-hmm. we jumped out there all the time. So it's a certified drop zone. It's a landing field for major aircraft, and apparently it's housing your aircraft. Is it hangared or is it sitting out under the sun?
There's not a hangar big enough.
I didn't think
Gadsden.
So. I was trying to picture.
That's right. Yeah, the wingspan is 95 feet, and so I think the largest hangar door might be 80.
I think that there's one over there that it would fit in, but like you have like an inch on each side trying to push it through.
All right. So most people like get into the idea of toys, and they buy like a 68 Mustang, or you know somebody gets a side by side or a four wheeler, and they're like, woohoo, I got a toy. No, you guys went and bought a DC-3. That's very cool, and I'm loving it. But let me ask you this. Did you buy it with the intent to use it for relief, like taking supplies to hurricane sites, or did that just happen? And I'm going to get into that in more detail in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. That just happened.
Okay.
Initial use for the airplane, we were just wanting to resurrect something that somebody left derelict at an airfield in Ohio. So they had actually used the aircraft probably for 30 years for an organization called RAM, Remote Area Medical, out of Knoxville.
Okay.
Where they flew it to Haiti, also around the states,
okay,
doing medical relief work, medical missions work.
All right.
The man by the name of Stan Brock was the captain of the aircraft and started the organization, Remote Area Medical. And so he was a pretty influential.
Wonderful things.
Yeah, did a lot of great things around the planet. So.
Well, I saw a picture of your aircraft, and I don't know if it's still that way, but you still have Remote Area on the side of it. Is that right?
Okay. Yes, sir.
And have you had to do? I mean, how much restoration work have you had to do besides getting it cleaned up? Is it like in
very little? Everything was pretty well ready to go. With aircraft like that, the more you use things, they start to limber back up and work again. So we had to get in there and grease and. You know,
I feel that way about myself.
That's right.
I get up in the morning and start moving, and things start loosening up finally.
But it sits there for 6 months. Unbelievable how many things leak and
yeah,
want to act up a little bit. So,
well, all right. So, you guys, Hurricane Helene hit,
mm-hmm.
And I know you were probably seeing the devastation like the rest of us on the news or wherever. And then somewhere along the line, which one of y'all got the idea to fly stuff up there to
Carolinas? It was actually another pilot. We've got a group text amongst how many of us is there? Six or seven in that text? Mm-hmm. And one of them sent a text
Sunday morning.
Sunday morning, and said, well, I was sitting in Sunday school at the time. And he sent the text and said, hey, I talked to Trey, and Trey said, let's see if we can load up the DC-3 and take some supplies to North Carolina. Who wants to help? Well,
next thing you know, hands are being raised everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Wait, how many guys first had to go, hey, honey, do you care if I go? How many conversations had to happen like that?
Well, I was a little skeptical that we could get enough supplies in order to fill a DC-3. So Andrew says, well, when are we going to go? And I said, when the bird's full. When we've got full supplies, then we'll go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it was full by Sunday afternoon.
No kidding.
We had 6,000 pounds of cargo by Sunday afternoon.
I go to Southside Baptist Church.
Right.
And I met the pastor 5 minutes before service started and told him our idea. And he's like, okay, I'll make an announcement at church.
Now, is that Scott Hassel, or is this the other church? There's two Baptist churches at Southside.
This is Southside.
This is the other one.
Scott Hassel's at Southside First Baptist.
Gotcha.
So this is the one on 77.
Gotcha.
And this, our pastor's David Little.
Gotcha.
And
I know David.
I talked with David, and I said, David, we've got this idea. And he goes, okay, I'll make the announcement. He makes the announcement, and we open the church back up at 2 o'clock for donations. And by 6 o'clock, we already had a plane and a half load of donations.
What now? Okay, that's, first of all, that's America right there.
Yeah,
that mm-hmm. is. But what kind of stuff are we talking about?
Everything from bottled water to pet food to hygiene, baby formula, diapers,
wipes, yeah, all that.
You name it.
Wow. Well, I tell you what, believe it or not, we're already at the first break, but I think we've laid the foundation. We come back from this break, though. What I want to do is I want to get in the nitty gritty, like. You guys got stuff, but then you have to still know where to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to get on the ground. And then you have the adventure of trying to get back and then maybe reload and go again. So we're going to hear all about it when we get back, all right?
Great.
Okay. All right, we're on Right Side Radio. I'm sitting in studio right now with just a couple of guys that got busy with some friends and decided, you know what, let's fly our personally owned DC-3 up to North Carolina and take stuff. I'm going to tell you right now, y'all, that is America. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, I'm back in studio right now with Trey Pearman, Andrew Richardson. I almost said Robertson. It's Richardson. Sorry about that. Well, all right, so fellas, you guys got a plane. You guys got friends. You got churches that got busy. And I said it half jokingly, but really serious. This is just classic America right here. And you're out of pocket, I guess, all this, right? The fuel, the plane, everything is all completely out of pocket. Am I right in saying that?
Well, we started out, it didn't matter what we figured all of that take care of itself. And so we hit the road and just made it work. And, but there's been such a huge outpouring of not only our community, but I talked to a lady in Houston the other day that wanted to donate and cover a little bit of fuel for one reason or another. So we've covered our fuel bill. We've covered transportation costs. A lot of people volunteered to transport 18-wheeler trailers for us.
Yeah.
And so we've, you know, not only has it just been our community, but it's reached all the way to Texas, that people that have seen what we've been doing and have felt for the people of Helene's Path.
Well, so let me ask you this. So part of my military background was in disaster preparedness and evacuation of non-combatants in a war zone and all that. So I kind of get the idea that a lot of times they have to have central command so that you don't have things just rushing in and people dropping stuff off and you don't even know what's there. So I'm assuming that there is command and control. FEMA is usually the incident commander on the ground. National Guard plays in. All those things happen. But you guys are coming in from Alabama. How did you know who to even talk to or where to go? Because it's not like there's a big phone network that's still up and running up there at the time when you were doing this.
Yeah, that's what's difficult. Most of the cell phones were down, across the region for sure. And so Andrew got on the phone and got in touch with a lot of people.
The first load we carried to Asheville, North Carolina, that was kind of a learning experience. We really didn't have a good contact, but we got up there and they're like, well, these people are helping distribute. And we're like, well, great, just send it to them, that'll be good. The second load, I was in contact with Avery County EMA, and they told us where we could go and who to get it to.
Okay.
And that was distributing.
So basically you had to get on the ground the first time and face-to-face with people in order to be able to come back a second and third time. Is that what you're saying? Kind of know where
not,
to go?
Not really. In between that, we went on
Tuesday
to Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay.
And then Wednesday we went to Banner Elk. And when we went to Banner Elk, I had made that contact when we got back that Tuesday night.
Is there a ground control? I mean, it's saying, like air traffic controllers guiding you in, or are you just going to a regional airstrip and hoping there's nobody's parked on the tarmac?
Well, at Asheville was it was a controlled airspace. Okay. And so there was approach and tower and ground control.
Okay.
It still took us probably 20 to 25 minutes to get out. I had some friends that came out of Georgia that later in the day, and they waited an hour and a half to get out.
Oh, wow.
There was so much congestion at that airport because that was the biggest airport
right. In
the region. So by default, people were going and taking supplies there. So it was really inundated with aircraft traffic.
All right, so you got the first load, like Sunday afternoon, you already had your first load and a half ready to roll, but apparently supplies kept coming in. So what next? I mean, you came back and decided to keep going for a while, so how more supplies kept showing up at the church or what?
Yeah, the church became kind of our central donation point and just kind of made sense. We had volunteers there to help accept donations, and they were on board with helping as well. So it was a great, great partnership as far as the receiving donations. And then we had kind of handled logistically getting the donations to the people.
Wow. All right. So flight one, Asheville. Flight two, you said, was to
Banner Elk.
Banner Elk. And then flight three went to where?
Aiken, South Carolina.
Aiken, South Carolina. Okay. When you got on the ground, what was the reception?
At Asheville, forklift delivery, very commercialized experience. The FBO knew where we were coming. They had a forklift. We're probably one of the largest aircraft that was there. So they unloaded us pretty quick. We got out of there. Completely different experience going into Banner Elk. Very mountainous terrain. The airport was located in the valley, so we actually flew. We were looking for the airport. Very hard to find.
Wow.
We were over the top of it almost before we found it.
These are all daylight conditions, though.
Yes. Daylight, yeah. VFR conditions.
Yeah.
So we had to circle the mountain and come back for a second approach because you're approaching the airport at a 45-degree angle. Later we find out that people are mentioning maybe you need a mountaineer pilots, people that are real familiar with the area, and we're going, we can't even find the airport because you can't see it until you're literally on top of it.
So
the second approach, we went in, it was nail biting. We rolled all the way to the end and might have clipped a tree or two. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, on the ground, they said, this is definitely the largest airplane that's ever been here. Ever been there.
Like under even better conditions, the biggest airplane's ever been there.
Yeah.
We couldn't pull off the runway. We had to park on the runway. And while we were there, you know, Operation Airdrop organization out of North Carolina, well, out of Houston, maybe?
Yeah, they're actually out of Texas, but they were operating out of, what was it, Statesville and...
We probably
Hickory, I think,
probably had 13 general aviation small aircraft flying in land. So we had to wait for all those guys to unload. We helped them unload before we could get out of there and clear it out. So.
All right. When we get back, what I want to talk about, we're about to take a break right now, fellas. When we get back from this one, I want to kind of go into the coordinating elements. Did you see or interact with FEMA or any other NGOs that were on the ground? Who did you see? Who did you talk to? But I also want to hear what citizens. And then there's a lot of talk about airspace, drones being an issue. Now we got National Guard helicopters. And so I'd love to get your perspective on the discussion about having to close certain things from the airspace or even control the airspace differently than what was doing at first. All right. We're in studio with a couple of real deal Americans, right side ruffians, who get out there and just fly their plane to where it's needed. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, don't argue with me, it's Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. You guys sitting here, I'm sitting here in studio with Trey Pearman and Andrew Richardson, and they have been flying supplies back and forth to North Carolina a bit, and it's got me kind of jazzed, to be honest with you, and apparently my audience is too. We got a text line sitting over here. You guys probably can't see it where you're sitting, but there's people that are live texting to the show constantly, and Kevin from Hartsell says you guys are like Red Dawn. So maybe you need to go ahead and paint that on the side of the bird. Just call it Red Dawn. But anyway, I need to ask you, though. So there's been a lot of talk about whether FEMA's got their act together, whether NGOs are carrying the bulk of the weight. But I also know that NGOs, non-governmental organizations, are huge in every circumstance. Who'd you see? What kind of response did you get from various aid organizations or from the government? And was it efficient? Was it still kind of get its feet under it? What'd you see?
You know, we had got word that in Asheville that they had a C-5 delivery, C-17, pretty large delivery of supplies through the military. It was gone. What was that? We dropped Tuesday and it came back in Wednesday, I think is what it was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, really, really big, heavy military presence in Asheville. Chinooks, Rangers, you know, all rotor equipment to be able to go in and sit down in some of those areas. The Banner Elk, two Coast Guards, helicopters.
Wow, Coast Guard.
Those weren't Coast Guard, were they? I think they were just painted red and white. I think they were just helicopters painted red and white.
But they were doing a lot of...
I didn't see no Coast Guard emblems on them. But.
Okay.
We flew over a lot of... helicopters that were doing gas line inspections to make sure that their gas lines haven't ruptured or landslides over their gas lines. So those guys were out there. We got a lot of those up on ADSB while we were flying around.
Was the airspace, was it congested? I mean, I heard at one point that either DOT or maybe even FEMA itself was calling for a shutdown of drones and that kind of stuff and saying no fly zones were in effect. And did you see any of that?
When we flew through Asheville's airspace, there was a TFR over Asheville. Temporary flight restriction for presidential movement.
Okay.
So that was when they were coming in. As you know, it's not that big of a deal. You just have to be in radio communication with ATC. During the process and squawking a code.
Any trouble with did you feel like anybody didn't have their act together, or was it all being roughly coordinated as best you could see?
The airdrop operations, Operation Airdrop, the organization, I'm not real sure if they had everything, their act together for sure. Seemed like, again, just a bunch of general aviation pilots. They weren't commercial pilots. I think that really they should have shut down and restrict a lot of the airspace because it was extremely congested.
Okay. Well, what about folks on the ground? Did you see any displaced civilians? Did you talk to locals? Did you get a chance to interact with them much at all? I know you're kind of on the ground offloading and going again, but did you get a chance to interact with folks up there at all?
Once we got into Banner Elk and Aiken, South Carolina, that's who helped us unload the airplanes. We had to hand unload all the supplies. And so when you're unloading a pickup truck's one thing, but we had 6,500, 7,000 pounds worth of supplies we had to unload. So it was quite a task. So they, Banner Elk, bunch that it was all locals. And so we got a lot of good feedback of what they needed. And so they're writing on a dry erase board, taking a picture of it, posting it on Facebook with a date on it, and that's their needs of the day.
How about that?
Yeah. But they were.
That's ingenuity right there.
But there was nobody there other than general aviation pilots. And, that's who was supplying that Banner Elk area. And then Aiken as well, the South Carolina, they said, we feel like we've been forgotten. In Georgia, we've heard the same comments. Florida's getting a lot of federal attention. North Carolina's getting a lot of federal attention. But there was a lot of damage between the two up through Georgia and South Carolina that there's zero assistance.
Isn't Aiken right across from Augusta area?
Yes.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not an unknown area, but so they were feeling like they were kind of like getting – second fiddle, huh?
Correct.
Yeah. The association we're dealing with over there, my contact is through the South Carolina Baptist Coalition.
Yeah.
And she's the director of missions for the South Carolina Baptist Coalition.
Yeah.
And so she reached out to her, and I asked her where the best place or where the most help was needed in the area for them. And she said Aiken was just like nobody was helping there. And they had a tremendous amount of damage. And so that was the reason Aiken was our third location.
Now, you guys got the aerial view as you flew in. I mean, I can remember when tornadoes came through. I used to be in the state Senate, and I got a chance to go up with my sheriff's department and just fly over some of the devastation of the 2011 tornadoes to see. And you can see storm track from the air. It's pretty amazing to see. I don't know what it's like in a hurricane, but could you see the storm damage from the air as you were flying in?
Me being the pilot, I was focused on the mission. But a lot of my passengers,
good answer.
That's right. A lot of the passengers got a really good video, really good pictures of bridges that were still standing in the middle of the river, but the road on both sides of it was completely gone.
Yeah.
So it wasn't that the bridge ever got washed out, and we saw that in several occasions. Mm-hmm. The bridge was still standing. May have been piled up with logs or whatever, but the water ate its way around the bridge on both ends, and so the roads are just gone.
Wow. Well, what's next? I mean, you guys have made three trips. You got any more trips planned? What are you thinking?
Well, so we've got some more supplies coming in, and we actually sent a truck today to Aiken again.
Okay.
That will be the third load. We've sent one truck, one plane, and then now another truck to Aiken. And I've reached out to the Florida director of missions in Florida with the Baptist ministry and let them know what we have available. And if we are needed to bring air support to Tampa, let them know we're there and ready and available.
And we sent, 40,000 pounds of supplies to Katy, Georgia?
Kite, Georgia. Kite. Yeah, it was probably at least 40,000.
Wow.
Probably right at 40,000 pounds on that 18-wheeler.
I have never done anything on this show where I didn't have some of my listeners want to know how they could help. And so if somebody's out there listening right now and says, well, man, I'll drop supplies off at whatever your spot is. Are you collecting supplies? Can people drop things off? And if so, what would you want them to and how would it do?
So Southside Baptist is still, at the moment, drop center.
And for those who don't know out there listening, that's Southside, which is the name of the actual community, and it's in Etowah County, northeast Alabama. Okay.
So they're our drop center at the moment.
All right.
And then so they're palletizing. And who helped out the other day helped palletizing? Athletic Association. So we've had a lot of volunteers outside of the church that have also different community groups that have assisted in palletizing things.
Are you asking people to contribute monetarily, or do you want them to drop off stuff? How do y'all work that?
Whatever's best for the individual, we're good with any and all.
Okay. What kind of things are you looking for?
The top few items for sure is any kind of baby supply items. Wow. Diapers, wipes, formula, so on and so forth. You know, we've seen the needs transition from, you know, they really don't need bottled water anymore.
Okay.
Even though, you know, we've just got tons of bottled water.
Not as much. That seems to be what they get overwhelmed with initially is bottled water. That seems to be the initial, hey, we got to get them water, we got to get them water.
And I would bet, too, some of the military units that are now there have they have the ability to make potable water and, mm-hmm. and to clean things and to provide the huge trailers of water and that kind of stuff, too.
And it's transitioning to coats, blankets, sleeping bags, you know, more long-term needs.
Okay, so if folks want to contribute, they can contact Southside Baptist Church and say, I'm bringing stuff by, what time are you open, or how do they do it?
I think this coming week, we're going to be there tomorrow from 8:30 till 6 or 7.
Wow. Okay.
And then Sunday, we're going to be there from 2 to 6 Sunday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And then Monday through Thursday this week from 8:30 to, I think I want to say it's 6, but it may be 7.
And then bottom line is, I guess you're watching the weather to see what's needed and where you got to go, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, you guys are doing amazing stuff. I mean, and what's cool for me is that not only are you doing this, but you're doing this from right here in my town. So, thank you, first of all, for being willing, and being ready and able. And thank you for just, you know, sitting there and texting with your buddies and going, yeah, man, let's do it. Because that's how the best stuff sometimes starts, is just a group of guys going, hey, let's do it.
Well, and we're such a small part. There's been dozens and dozens of people that have volunteered their time and supplies and money and to help out for the overall need and cause. And so, you know, it's hands and feet of Jesus, you know, is the way we look at it.
Absolutely. So. Well, that's exactly what it is, and that's exactly what you are.
Yeah, and it's like I was talking to the pastor earlier, and I told him, I said, you know, sometimes the best things are spontaneous, because if we had really sat back and thought this through, it would not have happened.
Yeah. Well,
we would have talked ourselves out of it.
That's exactly right. And I tell folks on this show all the time, too, that the reality is sometimes it's just a matter of getting up and getting busy, mm-hmm. and having that calling, that moment. And it may be a moment in time. This may not be your life's calling to do this. You may not start the next Samaritan's Purse, but then again, you're here for now. And so anyway, bottom line is, on behalf of thousands and thousands of the Right Side Radio listeners, thank you very much for what you're doing. All right, JP, we're going to take that break right now and say goodbye to our guests. But listen, this is America. Who was it said it? Kevin Hartzell. Y'all are Red Dawn. That's just cool. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, JP. Initial thoughts on those guys and their DC-3 aircraft.
Well, during the interview, I actually looked up the DC-3 on my phone, and he wasn't lying about it being an old-looking airplane.
It's old and it's big.
Yeah, but that's pretty cool that, you know, that's his toy of choice, picking up a plane like that, you know. No, but I just thought it was really cool, you know, guys like them that just – they get up and go and help out in any way they can. And unfortunately, at some points – seem to be more competent and more achieving than our own federal government in the area.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But not that's, you know, stories like that are always cool.
It is cool. And I agree with you. So first of all, I am having big boy toys jealousy right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I have yet to get back to a classic Mustang, but they've got a DC-3. But nonetheless, I just love the fact that Americans just do this stuff. And I'm sure there's good people, you know, around the world that do things in their home communities, but I don't know that anybody does it like we do.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that the pastor just had to make the announcement during the morning service, and by the afternoon they were like, oh, all the supplies they need ready to go. It's pretty crazy.
What was the announcement? I mean, did he get up there and say, hey, you know, Andrew down here is going to fly some stuff.
Okay.
Y'all got some stuff, bring it to the church. Or did he look at him and say, you know, the Holy Spirit has told me you will bring things. I don't know. How did he do it? But
yeah. I wonder if, oh, you know, Andrew's got that playing and he's going to go out and help people. Okay. All right. We'll help out.
and it's a no-fooling plane. Jim from Huntsville texted in. He says, Phil, I agree with you about the immigrant situation. They're using immigrants for labor. I believe the bigger picture is change the demographic to win elections and stay in power. I agree to an extent. I think that's part of the long-range plan. I don't know that it would impact this election cycle, because they're not getting them here fast enough to get them all registered to vote. But they're trying, and we're finding out about it. Jim, good points on that.
And unfortunately, I saw a headline today that in Texas, the Texas State Secretary's office or whatever sent out a memo to poll workers to take non-citizen IDs as they would, you know, valid IDs for voting. So I haven't looked into the story very much, but I just saw that headline of, you know, they're putting out the memo in Texas to take the non-citizen IDs.
Texas is about as conservative as they get, but I'm wondering what – yeah, it's, see if you can find that story before we end the show today. Brian from Huntsville checked in. He says, don't worry about 20,000 Haitians added to Springfield. The Canada geese population dropped by the same amount. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Yeah, they've – in other words, they've got food, endless food supply. John from Decatur checked in, and what am I missing something on John from Decatur? Because I don't see anything. He just says, oh, the one above it, I just realized. He says, can the cities that these companies are hiring these immigrants put surcharges on the company's business license or take away the tax exemptions some of these companies get? They can try, but they would probably get sued for doing that unless they can show that they are breaking the law by doing this. But if they're being investigated for trafficking individuals across state lines for the sole purposes of putting them into employment over American citizens, I think they're going to get called on the carpet for that.
Yeah. Well, I got the story pulled up right here
what
from the Dallas Express from 2 hours ago. Says, a new advisory from the Texas Secretary of State's office directs election workers to accept driver licenses issued to non-citizens as voter identification, even though state-issued training materials indicate this should not be accepted.
Okay, so apparently what we have there is some people that got a picture ID, which is not a – is it a driver's license or is it a
– It says driver licenses issued to non-citizens as voter ratification. They should accept that, even though the state-issued training says that they should not be accepted.
Okay. So apparently he's got a state law he's dealing with, and there was a discrepancy in the information that was passed out for training. Even still, you look at it and go, really?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Non-citizen ID for voting. I tell you what, take a snapshot of every one of them. Becky from Shelby County. There's a reason immigrants should come in legally. They come in legally. They need to come. I can't even read her text. I'm sorry. Let me start from scratch. There's a reason immigrants should come in legally. They come to our country and do not know our laws and need to. Yeah, that. So I see what she's saying. She's pointing out that when they come through the legal process, they're advised of what citizenship means. They're given status in our laws and made to understand, you know, the value of being here, and they're also encouraged to assimilate. When they just flood across the borders, they could care less. They're just here to take advantage and to see what they can get. Mike from Florence, Alabama, says illegals are also counted for tax credits in the work opportunity tax credit. The WOTC, I did not know that. The work opportunity tax credit, I'm very familiar with WOTC, but I was not familiar with this part of it. He said they have designated community residents. A DCR is an individual who, on the hiring date, is 18 years old, as a principal residence within one of the following. And anyway, the bottom line is he gave me some of the verbiage. Yeah, the work opportunity tax credit has been a big deal, especially like post-Katrina. It was huge to give people some opportunities for tax credits for hiring and retaining employees in certain categories. But I didn't know that illegals were being counted in that. That's crazy. Jim from Grove Oaks says, hey, Colonel, truly a pleasure and a privilege to listen to your show. Did you hear the one about the North Korean who escaped to South Korea and then wanted to go back after he found out he actually had to work for a living? Ha, 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 ha. Blonde in Bama from Lawrence County says, why would non-citizens in Texas be allowed to vote? I don't know. I don't have an answer for you. I'm not sure why you would accept non-citizen IDs. Blonde in Bama, I don't have an answer for you. It's Texas. And if we find out more, we'll tell you. Mike from ARAB says they don't have to register them to use the mail-in ballots for illegals. They will cheat. Dems don't have a choice. They already sent 9 million ballots overseas, but there are only 2 million registered voters overseas. They will do whatever it takes to keep Trump out. I don't disagree with that sentiment. I think that is exactly their plan, is to do everything they can to keep Trump out. All that to say, we're coming up next. Don't forget, we're going to come back from the 4 o'clock break. We come right back into the Grand Council with Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. We'll get their thoughts on life as we see it right now. Any number of things can happen when that segment gets going. So, yeah, you guys stay tuned. More on that. And then text it in or call it in. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. And then as we head to the break, I got to tell you, the latest edition of the Right Philosophy video podcast just went live. So if you want to see it, it's part of the video podcast repertoire that Right Side Media provides to you. I film it every week in my house. Came out of production this morning and got published around midday. Right Philosophy Podcast is available right now on the rightsidemedia.org website. Check it out. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international, and oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, we're about to move to this thing we do every Wednesday afternoon at 4 o'clock. We call the Grand Council. But I got to tell you, brand spanking new, you might want to know this. The Grand Council is brought to you by Inspire Advisors. So Inspire Advisors, Paul Breyer and his team at Inspire Advisors, they are experts in what is known as biblically responsible investing. They can literally help you assess your investment portfolios and decide whether or not there's wokeness and anti-conservative agendas embedded in the companies that you're investing in. And then help you even find some biblically aligned alternatives. Well, Inspire Advisors has got classes coming up in this month and next, October, November, free classes where you can sit in and learn how to do retirement planning and see how these biblical principles can be applied to your investments. If you want to know more, too easy, man. Just go to their website. That's www.moneypatternwealth.com. Or you can go to our website, rightsidemedia.org, and check out our sponsors. It goes right to their link and takes you right to them. Yeah, Inspire Advisors, Paul Breyer, free classes. Sign up for it. Space is limited. Teach you all about biblically responsible investing. Yeah, and tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. All right, well, let me bring on two of my brethren in talk radio who have been doing this longer than me. From FM Talk 106.5 down yonder in Mobile, host of the Jeff Poor Show, editor-in-chief for 1819 News. Jeff Poor, are you here?
I am present.
You are indeed, loud and clear. All right, and then from up yonder in the north, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Cumulus Broadcasting, also says he's on other radio stations around the state, and, oh, by the way, writes for Yellowhammer, Dale Jackson. How you doing? All right, stand at ease. I pronounce a quorum. JP, hit it.
Assemble the Grand Council.
Ba-da. Ba-da, ba-da. All right, the Grand Council being in session, I'm saying, Jeff Poor, what do you got?
Do you think it's going to work, guys? The Biden administration or the Biden regime is saying that if you critique, they're conflating, I guess, somebody somewhere out there saying the government can control the weather and conflating that with people saying, people criticizing the federal response to these hurricanes as quote-unquote misinformation as if the two are the same. Is it going to work?
So I'm not sure if I understand the question, but are you saying that the winds skip faster across a flat earth? Is that what you're saying to me?
No. I don't know. Maybe you keep up with a guy named Alex Jones and some of these other people. Oh, yeah. They say that the federal government has created this storm just in time for the election. However, the Democratic Party has, or I say the left, let's make it more broad than that, is taking that as misinformation, and then they're putting it alongside Donald Trump saying that the Biden administration is doing a bad job at a hurricane response, saying the two are the same. Isn't that kind of creative?
So first of all, that is true conflation. That is taking two things that don't relate and bringing them together. That is literally taking the Flat Earth Society that believes that somehow we can impact weather patterns and create hurricanes, which I don't go with. I mean, that's like James Bond, you know, next level stuff. And the fact that FEMA might have done a bad job is totally different. They can do a bad job and it not be a conspiracy theory because you know why? Because they've done a bad job. Dale, weigh in.
Well, I think the easiest thing to do is to not have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about weather machines and things like that. Not that she actually did that, but she is saying that they're controlling the weather and stuff like that. That'd be one helpful part of this and make your criticisms, you know, actually wise and pointed and you'll be fine. But yes, they are going to try to make all criticism. And you saw Kamala Harris today. She was out there saying, hey, I know there's a lot of members of the media watching here. I think it's important to point out that the misinformation that people are putting out is really dangerous. And that's just a way of saying we don't like it when people talk bad about us. And the media is going to dutifully repeat that nonsense and talk about it. Those who are sane are going to have to deal with it. And it's because you just have to say, no, you suck. That's the problem.
It's what they do, though. It's part of Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals. You find the target, you ridicule it, then you polarize it. This is exactly what they did with the whole thing about, you know, if you dare to say Haitians are eating cats and dogs, which, by the way, I believe Haitians are eating cats and dogs, then you're crazy, and that negates your ability to have any commentary about anything else. You're not allowed to say government's doing a bad job because you dared to mention that also Haitians eat cats and dogs. Jeff, it's your own question. What do you got?
Yeah, this is what they do with everything.
Yes.
If you're a part of one little, like, at one time or part of a group, then you're just the entire apparatus. It's like if one Republican protest on January 6th, and the entire Republican Party is responsible for it. This is what they got left, guys.
That's all they got left. But like I said, go read Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals, and you're going to find out all about it. Dale, next question. What, pray tell, do you have for the group?
Well, I hate that it's somewhat similar to all of this, but is Kamala Harris the dumbest presidential candidate that's ever existed? She's having a situation almost Joe Biden-esque where she's running around, and every time she talks, it's worse. Joe Biden's about to die. Oh, let's run him out there and see if we can get him to make some sense, and everything will be fine. They run him out, and everyone's like, oh my God, he is about to die. And then it ends up costing him his position on the ticket. Is she worse than him somehow?
Yes. She's worse than him because at least he have the excuse of dementia. But she doesn't. I just don't think she's that bright. At the very least, she doesn't think well on her feet. I tell you what's funny, though, and this is cracking me up, is it seems like every time she tries to do something, her narrative gets co-opted by Joe Biden, who says just the opposite and makes her look like an idiot and steals her thunder. Jeff.
I find her to be lazy. I mean, let's just say it like it is. She doesn't prepare.
Yes.
She doesn't want to do interviews.
Yes.
She thinks there's a sense of entitlement that she is entitled to the nomination. Not even, she doesn't even think the primary process seems like at times she thinks it's beneath her, or the entire election process, I mean, that she should just be handed the presidency, that this formality is a waste of time, and she's not willing to do the hard work. Guys, like, presidential campaigns take years to come together. You start with like an exploratory committee. You have to be together for years and years and years and years. And then all of a sudden, I say 2-3 years, let's say. And then like they're trying to accomplish what it takes years in a matter of months. And I just don't think it's going to work.
Well, it should
work. My question, for the record, was, is she the dumbest candidate? that was my question.
I think I said yes before I went on my tirade.
Well, that's just she was lazy. I don't know about dumb. I think maybe she's probably capable of figuring this stuff out. She just is too lazy to.
Well, but I also think I'll say this. She comes across as dumb a lot, but she's also cagey like a fox. I mean, she is willing to take people out and do whatever's necessary to advance her own personal agenda, and we're seeing it. Left and right. Joe Biden being the classic example. All right, last question for the break. Let's stay on the Kamala Harris thing. So Kamala Harris is mad because Ron DeSantis will not take her call. He's down there dealing with the storm of the century. This is her chance to be in the limelight. Why will he not take her call? And yet DeSantis pretty much put her in her place by saying, she's been the president or vice president for 3.5 years. She has never called me once. I'm talking to the president right now. Why do I need to talk to her? Weigh in on it. Dale, you first.
Well, I think it also came out that she didn't actually make the phone call until after, like, there was complaints.
Really?
For Artie. So, yeah, I had heard that. That may be misinformation or, you know, just a lie that I want to tell. It's possible. I don't actually know. I did hear that. But either way, if she's calling and just wanting to play president as DeSantis said, that's really, really stupid. Back to my previous question. And I really, if Kamala Harris was any good at what she's doing, or her handlers were, you know what they would say? They'd be like, look at what Ron DeSantis is doing. This is why Trump hates this guy. Like that's what they should be doing. Just politically, just toss some red meat right in the middle there and let those guys go at it for a little bit. But no, she's instead bumbling and letting DeSantis just completely destroy her.
Jeff.
Yeah, I agree with that. She's trying to appear presidential, I guess. I don't know. They had a big conference call today, and she was in on it. But well, historically, guys, I mean, when George H.W. Bush said heck of a good job, Brownie, did Dick Cheney take any of the fallout? I mean, we just, the vice president is not equipped to handle or be dealing with these things in that role. It's just kind of a weird way of her pushing herself to the forefront.
Well, it also contradicts her message that Joe Biden is still large and in charge. If she's down there sort of co-opting his space and getting into his battle rhythm where she's not usually, you know, in line, she's not a commander-in-chief. She's not, you know, the head person. She has already touted Joe Biden as being the guy who's in charge. So for her to jump in there to do this is nothing more than a soundbite opportunity, and it's very visible. I mean, you could see it. It's like this is a tangible effort on her part to just get her name out there, and she just basically stepped on the rake, and it's really pretty funny. All right, round one. That went fast. Round one, Grand Council, Jeff Poor, Dale Jackson, and just little old me. You guys stand by. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades. All right, we're back for round two of the Grand Council with Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. I think I said Jeff Poor was first. So, Jeff, what you got?
Aldott strikes again, but it's a bigger picture. Gordo, Alabama, in Pickens County, kind of between Columbus, Mississippi, and Tuscaloosa, they're building the Gordo Bypass. Now, state law says that you have to post these legal advertisements announcing a bid twice before opening or conducting the bid. And it turns out one of these newspapers messed up and didn't print it, but Aldott went ahead along with the process. Now they got to redo the process.
Oh, and
for whatever the reason, $2 million is the price tag on the air. Will this be the straw that breaks the camel's back on the stupid, antiquated legal advertising regime we have in Alabama?
Wait, let me. So I'm catching up on this. So you're saying that it's a $2 million price tag to have to redo it?
Yeah, for a bunch of different reasons, logistically, cost of stuff. Yeah, so the Aldott claims $1.76 million, but others are saying it's going to be way more.
Well, they're gonna have to. We modified it some while I was there, but it's time for it to be completely modified. The notice systems that go out now are rooted in, like, you know, late 19th century, earlier 20th century, you know, newspaper and posting on the town crier's board. Kind of stuff. And so, yeah, if that's the case, especially if a gaffe like this. Now, by the way, if the gaffe happened because the newspaper didn't do its job, somebody needs to be talking to that newspaper about this $1.7 million price tag. Just saying. Dale?
Lawmakers are afraid of newspapers. This is a graft. This is a scam. This is an abomination before God. Nick Saban would be rolling over in his grave. It is absolutely wrong. And they need to stop this. You guys did not go far enough because your colleagues are cowards and they are afraid of the newspaper writing something bad about them when the newspaper is going to do it anyway. You are a supermajority Republican state. Burn those newspapers to the ground.
We put a lot of this stuff in online capability, which is where, you know, most of the – I mean, by the way, it's amazing, too, the number of handshake deals that happen, wink, wink, nod, nod, in small towns to give all the revenue for these local, you know, these local runs to a certain, you know, small-town tome that's no longer good for anything.
Listen. John Merrill said that his office could handle this at very little cost, and he'd be more than happy to take all of this on to save the money, and they still wouldn't do it.
I don't doubt it. The Newspaper Association probably went down there and raised Cain. So Jeff, to your question, I think this better be one of the things they talk about if it costs $1.7 million to the taxpayer.
They gotta do away with this Alabama Press Association's like monopoly. You know, like none of us can ever be a member of it. They're protective of their turf. I don't know if you guys read local newspapers in the state. I might be the only one here, but
online.
The ones that aren't online, they're not political. They don't even. I doubt the reporters can even tell you who their stupid state senator is. So I think this like fear that they're gonna these House members and senators are gonna get burned if they go against the stupid antiquated legal and advertising system.
Well, and
is unfounded.
And let's be honest, a lot of them are not even being run from the hometown anymore. I mean, the Gadsden Times right now has two employees. They used to have an entire block in downtown Gaston filled with employees, having their own presses, doing all the things. And they literally have two employees now, one reporter who works part-time and one guy who serves as the editor. And that's the Gaston Times now. And a lot of it gets printed in Talladega, or not Talladega, Tuscaloosa, and then sent in. It's unreal. But it's the only cash revenue source that some of these have, because they don't have subscription base hardly anymore.
Sucks to suck.
Well, 18-19 news, and people like you and Yellowhammer, y'all. That's the wave of the future right there. But all right, next question before we run out of time, Dale Jackson.
All right, Jeff kind of stole mine, so I'm kind of gonna go in a different direction. Did you guys know, attaboy to the state of Alabama, it's not really a question. Did you guys know that there were all these people leaving the state every time there's a hurricane? Task Force 3, Guntersville police, fire departments from Foley, and Decatur guys. I had no idea we were sending stuff everywhere we go. Do we pay for that?
Sometimes the Southern Company, you'll have Alabama-based linemen for Alabama Power, but they are all Southern Company employees, and they go left and right. State assets like state troopers and National Guard, I think there's a state compact between states to share the cost and the burden of doing it, and an agreement to be there and provide assistance. So I don't know how the cost is truly borne, but at the same time, if we don't do it and then we need it later, would they send it to us if we didn't help out? So, Jeff.
Yeah, I that's my understanding, that there's some kind of an agreement between the states, and that when this happens, then you send yours, and then when you have the problem, we'll send ours. And we've had this happen during a real bad hurricane, like probably since 2020, with Hurricane Sally.
Yeah.
But they do send stuff from out of state, so, well, I think it's part of an agreement.
So for a period of time in the National Guard, I was assigned to what was known as the DOMS, the Domestic Operations Group, and the DOMS group. They literally had state compacts. They had to renew them annually, make sure that everything was still up to date, points of contact all in place. But these state compacts were like agreements between states. If you get hurt, we're there. If we get hurt, you're there. All right, we got about a minute and a half, so let me just, not even that much. How much do I have? 30 seconds? Is that all I got? Okay, here's the bottom line. Voting in hurricane zones, is it going to be impacted or not a big deal? Jeff and then Dale.
I don't know that it's a big deal. Maybe I'm wishful thinking, but I feel like it won't be that big of a deal.
They'll whine about it, but it's easy. If you want to vote, go vote. It's not that hard. We've got this figured out. Stop whining.
And I'll say, too, North Carolina, they actually got very legislatively busy, and they made it available for everybody to vote in alternative means real quick because of the hurricane. All right. Appreciate you. Jeff Poor, 1819 News and FM Talk 106.5 down in Mobile. Dale Jackson, Cumulus Broadcasting and Yellowhammer News. And little old me, the Grand Council. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I am talking about this one, Alabama. Y'all, this show goes like way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gaston, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi. All thrown in, just for good measure. All right, I'm gonna go to the phones real quick. So you guys may recall that we've been tracking a group of Navy Academy graduates from 1983, class of 83, U.S. Naval Academy. 17 of them are doing what they call the Bamarama 500. They're biking, pedal bikes. They're biking 500 miles across the state of Alabama to raise money for veterans' causes. And James Sherrard has been keeping us updated. He is on the line right now. James Sherrard, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, Phil.
Good. You don't sound like you're pedaling right now.
I am not pedaling. We got to Troy about 4 o'clock local time. We rode 81.4 miles and 3,426 feet of vertical climb.
Nice.
It wasn't our hardest day, but it was again a tough day. It was a lot hotter today than it was yesterday, I think, because we were up in the mountains yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it is. And then you guys are, so the next leg after this is going to Auburn, is that right?
No, we just left Auburn.
You just left Auburn, that's
Auburn,
right.
Auburn, Detroit today.
Okay.
And what a grand reception we got in Auburn. It was absolutely amazing. I told you yesterday, breathless, but I was telling you, we got the sheriff's escort.
That's
8
right.
Miles into Auburn, and we got the same thing leaving Auburn this morning. We got escorted 8 miles out. And the Auburn Student Veterans Association and a couple of veterans groups there, they just treated us like royalty. We ate in the stadium, in the team dining facility there, and we got to tour of the stadium and the football locker rooms and walk through the tunnel out to the field. It was pretty incredible. We learned what the Iron Ruck is. Nice. And a lot of Navy guys don't know what a ruck is. I know because I live in Huntsville. But about the how the veterans carry a football game ball between Auburn and Tuscaloosa every year for the Iron Bowl.
It's a very cool tradition, and I'm glad you guys got to see it. So now you're in Troy tonight, and then what's your leg for tomorrow? Where are you headed?
Tomorrow's a Troy to Crestview, and we all know that's not Alabama, even though it's the Bama-Rama 500, but we know it's L.A., lower Alabama, really. So that's about as long as today. And then our longest leg is from Crestview all the way to Orange Beach. It's about 104 miles coming up on Friday.
104 miles, fairly flat, though, if I'm not mistaken.
Fairly flat.
Well, all right, you guys are cruising. Everybody doing well? Everybody still healthy?
Pretty much. We've had some scrape-ups and stuff. We had somebody had to go take care of their house in Florida, and someone else had a family thing that they had to depart a group from. So we're down to 15 now, still pushing strong. And all the details are at navy-cycling.com, and there's just too much to tell. There's a blog that just got posted for today's ride. And there's all kinds of interesting stuff. You'll hear about all the places we stopped and all the hosts. Just tremendous hospitality from several churches along the way. We're just overwhelmed again.
Well,
absolutely amazing what Alabama's doing with us.
I'm loving what y'all are doing, and we look forward to hearing the update again tomorrow. But in the meantime, y'all be safe, and thank you again for not just your personal service, for what you're doing right now for veterans' causes. So. James Sherrard, Bamarama 500. You guys can find them at their website at navy-cycling.com. All right, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Bill.
See ya. That's cool. And you know, I combine that with the fact that we had those guys in studio earlier that are, you know, just taking their personal plane and deciding to fly supplies to North Carolina, and just know that. I mean, America's still out there, is what I say. I hear all the time, and I even said in my monologue today, that we need people who have the mentality of go get busy and do the things that are necessary and step in when you're needed. And the Biden administration, the Biden-Harris administration, will do everything it can to try and portray America as fractured and in need and try to divide us with their intersectionalities and put us into little demographic boxes. And the reality is, that's not America. We are still the country that gets busy, and we just need. But basically, what we need is government to get more out of the way. Government has a role. It does, and I'm not gonna ever portray that government is like needs to just not. That's called anarchy when you don't have governance. Even Jesus recognized there was a need for government, but the truth be told, government that gets so burdensome that it regulates the ability of citizens to help into non-existence is not a government that's functioning the way it's supposed to. I'm loving the fact that we are watching Americans do the things that they do, and they do it well. All right, I'm looking up on screen right now. I can't wait to hear the sound bites later, but apparently Angry Joe showed up at the press conference today and has the dubious look on his face like he can't believe he's being questioned. Oh, this is going to be a good one, JP. We got to find out what that's all about.
I can already tell, you know, by the ticker that says that he's attacking Trump during hurricane update. I can already hear the misinformation being spread by Donald Trump about FEMA's not doing their job. It's complete misinformation.
Nothing true about that. FEMA's perfect. Mm-hmm. FEMA did everything right. FEMA, never mind the fact that Mayorkas has yet to come do his own press conference, by the way, who's in charge of FEMA, not FEMA per se, but Department of Homeland Security. There's been a bit of a tiff, too, by the way. I will say this. Been a bit of a tiff in the last few days. As funny as it is that, you know, that we're watching Biden do his press conference and get angry, there's also this kind of thing happening where you look at it and go, does he know he's undermining Kamala? Is he aware? Like, you may have seen the other day when he's at an event and he kind of on a lark, he put on a MAGA hat And he's standing there wearing a Make America Great hat, and people are like, "Woo, yeah, oh, great!" And you're thinking, "Okay, that's nothing but a soundbite or a video for the Trump campaign." And you got to know that Kamala's team is like, "Please, yeah, someone make him stop."
I get the vibe he's kind of over. I think he's kind of coasting out the rest of his presidency.
Oh yeah,
I think he's much more upset about how he was ousted than he lets on. Obviously, he's not going to come out and say that, but I think he's upset in general and kind of just riding this thing out. And I really don't think, you know, anything to do with Kamala's campaign is on the top of his mind.
Well, I tell you who else is upset is Jill Biden. I think yes. Jill Biden is in the background going, "Say this, honey.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, honey, we're going to do a press conference at 2. Why am I doing that? Well, it's going to be real important that you say some things right at 2 o'clock. And so twice now he has gone out and sort of co-opted the airspace, if you will, right when Kamala was doing something. He stepped in and said things. So one of the big ones, let me get back to my point. I've got it in my hot little hands. Dateline yesterday, Biden undermines Harris's campaign claim that Ron DeSantis is politicizing the hurricane response. So if you're not familiar, Kamala's been all about, "I have been trying to reach Governor DeSantis, and he refuses to take my call because he's making hurricane relief political." Well, the next thing you know, you get the ultimate beatdown from Ron DeSantis, who says, "I don't know why she says she's trying to call me. She's 3.5 years she's been vice president. She's never called me once. All she's trying to do is get a soundbite for herself. And I've been in touch with the president, so why do I have to talk to the vice president?"
Yeah, well, I was going to say, sorry to interrupt, but I was going to say, is she the president right now?
Well, I don't think so. No. Yeah. At least she says she's not. But then, right when she's saying all this, Joe Biden goes and does a thing. So Joe Biden, NBC News reported Monday that DeSantis was denying phone calls from Harris's team. Meanwhile, on Tuesday, President Joe Biden's opinion about the GOP governor's response was that he's been very cooperative. He's doing a great job. He's gotten all he needs. I talked to him again yesterday. He said, "You're doing a great job. It's all being done well. We thank you for it." This is him. This is Joe Biden saying this about Ron DeSantis. And basically implied that everything is great. Meanwhile, Kamala's like, "Everything's not great. Oh, never mind." So, I just watched this and I'm thinking, does he know he's doing this? Is it possible that he's doing this on purpose? This is like the second or third time he's done this in recent days, where he steps into, oh, I know what it was. He actually walked in. She was doing a public address and it was being covered by the media, who quickly switched away because he walked into the White House press room to do an impromptu at the podium with the press. And so everybody jumped away from filming Kamala to filming him, at which point he also said several things that were a bit controversial and then walked away, basically stole the airtime.
I think the rift between them two is going to cause them to ultimately lose the election, in my opinion. I think the disorganization and, I think they don't have a unified effort, you know, within the Democratic Party. Even though they want to put it out as that, I think the disorganization and how they literally did a coup against Joe Biden, I think that's going to end up costing them.
Sooner or later, there's got to be a whistleblower somewhere. Someone has got a book deal coming. Someone's got a podcast. Someone's going to have a guest appearance, you know. At the very least, National Enquirer is going to have a story. Something's going to happen where someone who works in the White House goes, "Yeah, so on that day, Jill Biden tore the room apart, and Joe didn't know what was happening, and we got him ice cream and made it better." But we're going to get the inside scoop at some point. I feel certain. But listen, the reality is, it has been something to watch, and I really believe that you're going to wind up hearing the true inside story at some point, and it's going to be hilarious. Sad, and yet hilarious. I mean, there are times when I watch Biden right now, and I feel like, I'm saying this as a descriptor, all right? This is not like an insult, but I remember when I was a kid, and we'd have a special needs kid in our class, and watching people pick on him to get him to say things or do things. And there are times when I watch Joe Biden right now and I feel like he's that special needs kid. that is being forced into positions to say and do things, and doesn't realize that he's being put in that position for the wrong reasons. And then at the same time, I also look at it and think, at the same time, Joe Biden has made a career out of being just a complete tool. And, you know, I look back on things he did, like with, you know, bringing in Justice Thomas, or, you know, and wearing him out for weeks, or things he did along the way with making horrible foreign policy decisions, or his family abusing his position of power. And I'm thinking, you know what, at the same time, what goes around comes around. So there's a bit of that going on in my head as well.
I feel awful president, awful policies, but I do feel bad for him in this sense, you know, because I feel like he was put into office in the first place, knowing, like, the Democratic Party knew that he wasn't physically capable to, but they needed a puppet, and he seemed like the right puppet, and now they're through with him, they threw him off the side of the road, and it's, you know, I feel bad for him in that sense, but like you said, you know, what goes around comes around. So.
Well, I'm looking for the election to go well. I tell you what, we're going to take a break right now. We come back, I'm going to wrap the show, take some text messages. And I got to also tell you, I've been wondering what's going to happen with voting in the hurricane zones. I got a piece here from Fox that just came out. I'll tell you some new developments. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right, so I wanted to make sure y'all knew. I've been wondering what's going to happen, and I've also been wondering what the impact could be to the fact that we have an election coming up, and these hurricanes have been slamming some of the voting sites. I mean, there's people that don't have power. How can they vote? And there are some places where roads in North Carolina are still closed off, and you wonder, can people even get to the polls if they want to? And yet, while I recognize that life, limb, and property is more important than casting a vote, at the same time, casting a vote right now probably means more to some people than it has meant in their entire life. So North Carolina, what's interesting too is, and I got to say, this article I've got here from Fox News, I didn't know, but it does point out that the severe damage in North Carolina has been done in several predominantly red counties, places. Trump only won North Carolina by like 1.4 points in 2020. So on Monday, apparently, the North Carolina Elections Board, and not. Let me say this. I'm a little concerned when I find out that election boards can make decisions like this, because I thought it all had to be legislatively done. But what I'm imagining, though, is that the legislature had already granted them the authority to do certain things. So that's probably where we are. But it says on Monday, the North Carolina Elections Board passed a bipartisan emergency resolution that reformed the state's early voting process in 13 counties. Notably, all but one of those were counties that went for Trump in 2020. So it's not like it was a Democrat, you know, big swing. It says the adjustments include things like changing or adding voting sites, maintaining their availability, extending the hours for a voting site to stay open, and adding or reducing days that any site is open for early voters, and then also allowing people to request absentee ballots a little bit longer than they would have and return the absentee ballots to another county seat if their county seat is closed. So, I mean, that's all reasonable stuff. We're not talking about ballot harvesting. We're not talking about, you know, some kind of cheesy setup. But President Trump was talking about it with Laura Ingraham. He said he thinks that people are going to crawl to the elections if they have to. And he said that the RNC with his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, are really focused right now on helping North Carolinians figure out how best to accomplish their right to vote. So there's that. And now we'll watch Florida. And just pray for Florida, y'all. Hurricane Milton's closing in. It has been reduced to a Category 3. The wind speed's dropped 5 miles an hour since we went on the air, but it's hitting the shore about 9 p.m. Central Time tonight. Currently running at 120 miles per hour, Category 3, Hurricane Milton. It looks like the Vero Beach area, I think that's south of Tampa, is getting the highest wind gust at the moment, a 72 miles per hour gust, and it hasn't even hit shore yet. So you got to know the storm surge is going to be big, and just pray for the people of Florida. Dave from Rimlap checks in. Dave from Rimlap says, Dave here, an illegal alien is lawless for our... It's a long text. I can't get all this. He said, an illegal alien is lawless for our government to allow and mortally dangerous. Your glass is always half full on lawless actions when, in fact, it shouldn't be tolerated for any reason. Are you accusing me of accommodating here? I don't think so. He said, an example of your 1819 crew regurgitating alphabet media lies is Doc Holliday saying you can talk yourself into anything. What is he talking about? What are you mad about, Dave from Rimlap? Just listen, the bottom line is, no, we're not putting up with anything that's illegal.
Well, if you keep reading, he gets into conspiracy land here, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Did he go flat earth on me?
No, but 9/11 truther on our hands. So.
Okay, great. All right. Stephen from Somerville says there was a rank in Decatur. A rank? A rank in Decatur where.
I assume it means wreck.
A wreck. Thank you. Got it. Now I get it. Okay, voice texting probably. There was a wreck in Decatur where Highway 20 and 67 meet next to Raceway's 18 wheeler flipped on its side. All right, thank you for the heads up. Appreciate that. If you're on Highway 20, 67 intersection area, be aware as you're going home. Kareem from Huntsville checks in. Kareem says, I'm sure you guys are all beside yourselves over Joe Biden, but Trump and something love affair means nothing.
I'm assuming he means Putin's love
Trump
affair.
Trump and Putin's love affair. Yeah. I'm glad I have you here to interpret. He says, seven calls since he left office. What do you think they talked about? Our country's secrets, 27 days to go. MAGA will be gone. Keep wishing, Kareem.
Can I just say this real quick? Yeah. That first of all, I think the Putin-Trump love affair is absolutely ridiculous, and I don't think many Democrats even believe themselves when they say that. But let's go along with that premise, just for the fun of it. Who was the only U.S. president that Putin did not invade another country while they were in office?
That would be Trump.
So I forgot that it's a bad thing that Russia doesn't do anything when Trump's in office. You know, it's they want to support Ukraine, but they want to attack the only president who stopped Putin from doing anything.
Well played, sir. So. Well played. Grades are in. JP gets an A+. Phil gets an A++. However, today's co-winners are Phil's spectacular guest speakers who were here in studio, Flying Supplies in North Carolina, with an A++. Thank you, John. We appreciate you. All right, you guys, listen. I'm serious when I say it. There's more of us than there are of them. God is still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you tomorrow.